You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We will we'll get to QB wide receiver dynamic duos here in just a second. This is a text message. We were talking about Antonio Brown. We've talked about Antonio Brown a few times on the show today, and Antonio Brown going on another sort of maniacal little Twitter. I won't call it a barrage. It was just sort of a tweet, a maniacal screw the NFL kind of tweet. And then he apologized several minutes later because he realizes he has a meeting coming up with the league next Wednesday. And I think my take, and I think the take of a lot of people, is Antonio, you need to stop doing this stuff. You need to shut off your Twitter account because this is not helping you get employment again. I'm going to assume, Seth, that this tweet is sarcastic.
Yeah.
But I'm going to read it anyways because maybe there are some people thinking this. When I said that he should delete his Twitter account and then just go meet with the league because the guy clearly wants to play football again. Sean, did you really pull a shut up and play move? I think sort of a takeoff of the whole LeBron shut up and dribble thing.
Yeah.
That some politicians were saying when LeBron would comment on things of a political nature. Did I say that about Antonio Brown, shut up and play? Yeah, kind of. Because Antonio Brown's not out here sharing political views or talking about human rights or talking about any sort of social justice. Antonio Brown is sitting here just tweeting like a maniac, swearing and cursing, and he's unemployed. He's trying to get a job.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, I am saying shut up and play.
Yeah, you're not saying shut up and play, like stop sticking up for other people or stop talking about noble things or things that are important to you. It's not a stick to sports take. It's a stop acting like a clown. You're not, anytime Antonio
Brown. It's advice.
Every time Antonio Brown has spoken, he's not sticking up for anybody other than he's lashing out at people,
yeah.
Right? Or making himself look foolish.
He's barely sticking up for himself. Like, he's just out here cursing and talking about the league.
Yeah, I would defend you on saying shut up and play.
Thank you. Yeah,
that's not you're not squashing any. You're not trying to take away anybody's voice or anything like that.
Yeah,
he needs to have his voice taken away from him. If he were an old man and these were his keys, you would take them away from him to protect himself.
Yes, because he's driving into trees and phone calls.
Yes, Antonio Brown is an old man, and his speech needs to be taken away from him because they are his keys.
They are, and they're hurting him right now.
Yeah.
And others. Really not others, just himself. I would say and his kids because he's not. Helping himself get the chance to earn $30 million guaranteed. So they did a ranking here on NFL.com. Adam, ironically, Adam Rank is his name, on NFL.com did a thing with the best quarterback wide receiver duos in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I want to debate, Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins are third on this list, which they are. And does, you know, Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett are number one? Drew Brees / Teddy Bridgewater, basically whoever's playing for the Saints, and Michael Thomas are number two. Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins are number three. Just to round it out, Mahomes and Tyreek Hill four, Matt Ryan and Julio Jones five. My question to you, Seth, is as a former defensive player and putting yourself in the shoes of, say, a defensive coordinator, these five duos all have a superhero power to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mahomes and Hill, their superhero powers, obviously. Tyreek Hill can break a game open at any time with his speed and beat you downfield. The Texans experienced that back in week six. The superhero power for Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins is almost the opposite of that, where Hopkins has just turned into this short and mid-range beast this year that can't be stopped when it comes time to move the chains. And so my question for you is looking at not just those two duos, but all five of them, which duo has the superhero power that is hardest to defend in game plan?
I honestly think, looking at all of those, did you name off all me who they are.
I'll repeat them one more time.
Okay. Oh, no, if you read them, that's all right. I was trying to look up a stat.
Okay.
So the Russell Wilson-Tyler Lockett one is the one that I think I would feel most concerned about because I don't know what you choose to stop with Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett. If you look at, for one, he's got the highest catch rate in the league. When Russell Wilson throws it to Tyler Lockett, a higher percentage of the time than anybody else, the ball is caught. And they do it all over the place. Like, the deep crosses he caught 90% of the time last year. Oh, okay, well, just take away the deep ball. Yeah, curls, he catches those 90% of the time, too. And, oh, okay, well, maybe if you just keep Russell Wilson in the pocket. Or oh, broken plays are one of his most effective routes. The corner end zone. Anywhere you want to try to take away from Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett, I don't think it's simple or easy to do. With DeAndre and Deshaun, at the very least, there's kind of a formula that, look, we can limit what DeAndre is going to do. He's still going to catch a lot of first downs and whatnot, but we're going to, especially with Will Fuller off the field, we're just going to rotate our safeties over. We'll have our guy play really, really tight man coverage and just because he's got help behind him. And we'll try to limit what he can do.
And we'll make the Texans have to go 15 plays to score a touchdown.
Yeah, Tyler Lockett is... Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett have a really good relationship. And that was... You know, a lot of people suspected or wondered whether Tyler Lockett could be the main guy.
He's a third-round pick.
Yeah, they've got a history now of just wide receivers outperforming expectations there.
That's a great point. Doug Baldwin.
Yeah, Baldwin. Remember, it was Deion, future coach of Florida State, said that he was just, I eat. Wait, was it Deion? Who was it?
I don't remember this.
Somebody, remember, Doug Baldwin got very offended.
Yeah.
Texters, listeners, let me know who I'm.
713-5.
Yeah, Doug Baldwin got very offended that somebody just said that he was just I eat. And that was like kind of just when Doug Baldwin really started to take off.
Yeah, I think when Tyler Lockett came into the league, I think he was viewed as undersized because he's undersized, but I think he was viewed more as sort of a gimmicky player, right? Like a guy who can help you in the return game. I think it's kind of a poor man's version of how people viewed Will Fuller coming into the league. Oh, he's a speed guy who may be able to stretch the field, but he's not a very big guy. He's turned into a complete receiver. Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson had a perfect passer rating last year when he threw the ball in the direction of Tyler Lockett. When he targeted Tyler Lockett last season, he had a perfect 158.3 passer rating, Russell Wilson. So there's nothing gimmicky about it. Like, these two have a true connection, and I'm with you. He's turned into a complete receiver. These other three that are on the list... The Saints quarterbacks and Michael Thomas.
Well, Michael, and the other, this is why they were going to pay Michael Thomas. It was just a matter of, this is the perfect example of somebody who's even more valuable to the Saints than he might be to other teams. Because what Michael Thomas does so well is he gets open very quickly. So for Drew Brees, who's clearly lost something with his arm strength, he's not the same guy he used to be. They'd never before paid wide receivers. The Saints weren't in the business of paying wide receivers. They just figured between Drew Brees and the system, they were going to get guys open. Michael Thomas does a lot for Drew Brees because Brees is smart enough to know where exactly he's going to be and how Michael Thomas is going to get open, and then Michael Thomas just flat out does it. So the quick stuff underneath and then tackling him afterwards with a run after the catch is the big challenge with Michael Thomas.
What about my contention with Tyreek Hill, Seth, coming into the season? And this was a big topic because we didn't know that there would be a season for Tyreek Hill because of his off-the-field stuff, is that Tyreek Hill might be the most valuable non-quarterback in the league, that he's a guy whose game sort of just changes the calculus of what his offense can do. Now, here's the thing. Tyreek Hill missed some games with some injuries this year, and the Kansas City Chiefs offense was still pretty damn good because they've got other speed guys. Mecole Hardman was a real find for them. Sammy Watkins has kind of refocused himself this year.
Travis Kelce,
obviously. Their running back position has been really good this season. But the Mahomes-Tyreek Hill thing is obviously at a different level.
I was kind of hoping, actually, that the Chiefs would go undefeated while Mahomes was out. I was hoping Mahomes would miss three games. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. And that they would go undefeated so people would realize, oh, wow. Oh, yeah, that's right. He does actually have a whole bunch of other talent on that field as well.
Yeah.
As opposed to DeAndre now this year. DeAndre has done what great quarterbacks do, which is he's made guys look perhaps a lot better than they actually are. And you know Darren Fells is now my favorite Texans player.
Yes.
Offensively.
I am aware.
I love Darren Fells. But he's leading the NFL in touchdowns, not necessarily because he's the best tight end in the NFL. You know, I think George Kittle, Travis Kelce, several of these other guys are probably better overall. But Deshaun has turned him into something. And Bill O'Brien, to his credit.
Yep.
And Tim Kelly.
Yeah. No, absolutely. By the way, did you hear, I don't know if you happened to see, if it ran across your Twitter timeline yesterday, did you see what our colleague Nick Wright said about the Kansas City Chiefs? Nick Wright, who, by the way, they're looking for a new co-host for Nick Wright because Chris Carter is out at Fox. Carter,
do we know why?
No. The statement was very brief.
Is he the next
and it did
coach
not wish him well in future endeavors either.
Is he getting the job at Florida State?
I don't think he is. No. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's not. Nick Wright said that the Kansas City Chiefs are not losing another game this season or postseason.
Oh, really?
They are going to go undefeated the rest of the way.
He's letting his Nick Wright from Kansas City originally.
Yes.
Is saying that. Did he say it completely, 100% totally seriously?
He did with a straight face looking at the camera.
I don't see how you know what? I have to take him to task for that just because I don't know how you can predict that any NFL team is going to go to win out the rest of their games.
Since when has rational
season.
Thought gotten anybody a TV job before?
Well, that's a good point. All right. Bold predictions. You know the great thing about like Bayless especially. Nick is 400 times more rational.
Nick's excellent.
Nick's very good. I'm not trying to lump him in with Bayless.
No.
But the funniest thing is that you always see these people thinking that, oh, we got Bayless this time.
Right.
Look how wrong he was. No, he's winning there because you're talking about him.
Yeah.
Bayless will never be got. There's nothing Bayless can do or get wrong that you'll ever get him with.
Oh, Bayless, Coward, all of them. All you do is hold up their W-2. Here, look at this. What about anytime any of these Falcons wind up on these offensive power rankings or whatever, I'm like, okay. I mean, what have they won? 2 games this year, the Falcons? 1 game?
Yeah.
Matt Ryan and Julio Jones are 5th on this list. Yeah, cool. Cool story, bro. But yeah, that's.
I do feel. Look, Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. Anything the Falcons have done positive at all this year has been almost exclusively because of those two.
Yeah.
So I feel like I don't want to get angry about those two being up there, but it's not the year for them to be up there as top 5 quarterback.
Are we getting? Do we know yet? Can someone text in 713-572-4610? I've Googled. I can't find out if we're getting Matt Schaub this weekend or not against the Saints.
Oh, I thought I had read.
I was really bummed out. Schaub threw for 460 yards in that game.
Well, it was a lot. It was from behind a lot.
He had a lot of love. Yeah. After what Schaub did to the. I still haven't forgiven him for massacring the 2013 season almost single-handedly.
Matt Ryan's expected to play versus New Orleans.
All right. Well,
the problem was you were Googling Schaub instead of Matt Ryan.
I did, and then there's no stories.
Nobody's Googling, like, there's no headline that says Matt Schaub won't play this weekend. Yeah, it's about Matt Ryan will play.
I know. I got it. Jeez.
Do you understand exactly how wrong you were?
I do. I was really super wrong. You're right. Like, all the stories on Schaub are from like 2 weeks ago. We're getting a lot of texts.
To reiterate, you were wrong.
I know. Okay. I know. Yeah. We're getting a lot of texts with potential names for our feral cat movie that we're pitching to Pixar. Seth, Home of the Wildcats. I like this one. Puss in Cleats. That's pretty good. For those who don't know, Seth and I were proposing the new Pixar animal-based movie should be about feral cats living in the bowels of an abandoned stadium.
That would, and if Puss in Boots was, you can make that part of the Puss in Boots franchise.
Yeah, it could.
Have him out there
live in the same ecosym as Puss in Boots. It could be canon.
There used to be a lot of really, really bad kind of live-action type animated things, not live-action, but where horses would be doing stuff. Or remember the field goal kicking donkey?
Yeah.
Is that Gus?
Yeah.
It was Gus the
field goal.
Mr. Ed was the horse. Yeah, Gus was a field goal kicking donkey.
Yeah.
You had the big the rabbit there too. All this. Like, we had really stupid, cheesy stuff like that.
We were able to make their mouths move.
We need to use actual cats in this.
Ooh,
like actual feral cats.
Really?
Yeah.
Or at least computer generated to the extent the new Lion King is.
Right.
Where they look totally real.
Yeah.
But you want actual real cats.
I want actual real cats. Yeah. I want to make it look. I want to make it as low budget as possible.
Okay,
so you kind of like, you feed the cat peanut butter to make its mouth move, make it sound like it's saying.
Step above porn. Absolutely. Some of these I can't read, actually, because some of the words you guys are using in here. But needless to say,
I don't think anybody's ever used the peanut. I totally meant just to make them move their mouth so it would look like they were talking. The peanut butter and the dog is one thing, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a different
theoretically
thing.
Peanut butter and a cat for the same purposes, that would be. My goodness, I don't think that's possible.
You'd have to be a real cat lover for that to
check back on Monday. I'll have a report. Maybe. That's if I gross. Show up. If I make it out of you the
are,
ER.
You are disgusting.
All right. Now, you're the one that went there.
I did.
I didn't have that wasn't even thinking of said about
I'm
that.
I'm sorry. I was busy Googling Schaub.
Cat teeth.
I'm busy Googling Matt Schaub over here. Are the Astros messing with the Tony Soprano of Houston sports? We discuss next. All right, Seth, the YouTube wormhole you sent me into in the break is going to have to wait till the next break.
Hercules in New York, which is a movie about, as far as I can tell, it's a young Arnold Schwarzenegger, 21 years old, looking exactly like a...
Roided to holy right. hell. Of he is course. So gassed well, up.
He's Mr. Olympia at that right. point. He's big.
1970.
He's in this movie, because we were talking about stupid movies from the 70s.
Right.
He's walking in New York with some weird little dude, and apparently, I don't know if he's time traveled or whatever, but he's Hercules.
Right.
And he looks like Hercules. He comes across this college athletics practice, this track and field practice, and he goes up looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger, and they try to do the old cliche, like he goes up to the guy throwing discus, and the guy throwing discus looks like he weighs like 100, doesn't look like a college discus thrower at all, looks like skinnier than one.
God, this is awesome.
The discus thrower and the track coach are like, yeah, let's see what you got.
To Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, by this point, Schwarzenegger's got his shirt off.
Yeah.
like, dude, your level of skepticism is completely unwarranted by how muscular. So Schwarzenegger launches the discus.
Yeah.
It's a very poorly produced movie, so you can't actually tell how far it is, but you can tell by their reaction.
Oh, wait. Spoiler alert. Okay, go
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, it's yeah. really far.
Yeah.
So then, they double down on it because the javelin thrower comes over and the coach has the exact same, yeah, let's see what you
can
do.
So you can throw a javelin, musclehead, yeah.
They go through like four events where each time it looks like he breaks the world record. Right. He's like all striated and muscular and, you know, veiny and everything. And each time the coach, you can tell why this track practice, this track coach sucks.
Yeah.
Because he's continually skeptical.
Not a good talent evaluator. Yeah.
The one thing I was skeptical of is he does a long jump. Which, by the way, they do the long jump on what looks like the infield of a baseball diamond. There's no actual markings or anything. That one, Schwarzenegger running doesn't quite look like a guy that could actually jump a long distance.
But. So who? And he's got like a little sidekick with him that looks like Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah, I think
wearing a Bruce Arians hat.
I'm guessing that's the guy that like uncovered him from the time machine or something.
Okay.
I have no idea how Hercules got to be in modern.
He's
New
like
York.
This little wormy dude. He's like, hey, look over there, they're throwing a discus over there. Hey, yeah.
But I bet that movie.
I'm really excited to watch the YouTube snippets from this movie.
This is like because we were talking about Gus the field goal kicking donkey
right,
or whatever
right.
that movie was. It seemed like that was on TV on the weekends all the time.
Yeah.
And there used to be more stupid movies like that in
yeah.
the 70s.
Yeah. We need more stupid movies.
That was when people really started experimenting with drugs in Hollywood, mm-hmm. I think, that a lot of people, they would approve that script.
Yes.
They're like, yeah, this is great. This checks off all the boxes.
So the Astros yesterday, right about the time we were having our party up here, it was big talk up here. We had a client party up here, and he, you know, we're the sports people up here, so when the clients were making their way to our part of the party, they would, you know, they like chatting about sports with us. And the thing that seemed to get brought up more than a handful of times was, hey, did you guys hear what happened with the Astros today? They moved Reed Ryan out of his position as president of the team. Jim Crane brings in his son Jared to, I guess, essentially serve in that function, learn the family business of baseball. He's already been part of the family business of logistics and energy companies. And in the process, Nolan Ryan steps down from whatever role it was he had with the Astros. And the quote from... Mark Berman from Nolan Ryan, and this is, by the way, how Jim Crane found out through Mark Berman's Twitter feed, I will not be back with the club, and I'll leave it at that. Which, if you let your mind go to a place where you want to interpret it a certain way, sounds like a level of frustration. Anytime you say, I'll leave it at that, it sounds like you're leaving something out intentionally.
Right.
And I doubt it, and usually it's not nice things that you're leaving out.
Right, that's a, look, I'm going to be... I'm going
you can't
to,
say
I'm
something nice about somebody. Don't say nothing at all.
I'm going to take the high road here, but by conspicuously pointing out that
right.
I'm taking the high road, I'm kind of taking the low road
That's
a
right.
little bit.
That's
I'm going to take a high road while maybe throwing a few pebbles down on the low road.
There you go.
Yeah.
Where does Nolan Ryan fall on the spectrum of Houston athletes where you mess with Nolan Ryan and this really is kind of a... It is a bit of a heat check for the Astros that you're messing with the Ryan family and Nolan Ryan a little bit.
I suppose it's always a little, I guess it's a little strange and uncomfortable, his relationship with the Rangers. The fact that, now it was easy when he hated the Rangers.
Yeah.
Because he went from a period from 2012 when he was the president of the Rangers and they moved him in within the organization. He lost his presidency.
Yeah.
He was impeached.
They did to him what they just did to his son with
now
the
Astros. Now I get your impeachment joke. Okay, because of the presidency.
Yeah, yeah.
Like 2 hours later, I get that joke.
That's okay.
So he's impeached.
I figured that'd be a joke you would like, too. It bounced off you like a tennis ball.
I would if I was thinking about something else.
That's all right.
So, like a tennis ball, like off my skull.
Right.
Like Hercules threw a tennis ball at my skull.
It's like thinking to catch it in his mouth like a dog, and it bounced off his face.
So
continue.
I saw a video of a guy on a ship playing catch with a rugby ball with a beluga whale yesterday.
Did you really?
Incredible. He'd throw the beluga ball. The beluga ball would go fetch it and then bring it back to him.
No kidding.
As they're just riding along in nature. This isn't like some SeaWorld trick. Anyway, so it was always a weird dynamic, the fact that Ryan had this dual relationship in history with both the Rangers and the Astros. Didn't matter as much when they were in different leagues, right? Okay. Their paths do not cross all that often. Now the Rangers and the Astros are in the same league, and Ryan went from being on the outs with the Rangers after 2012, there was like a clear rift between the Rangers and Nolan Ryan, to, okay, so he's a part of the Astros organization because his son is president, and it's all cool. We get to look at Nolan Ryan. He's counseling Justin Verlander on his changeup and whatnot. Really cool stuff,
right? It was
nice
having him around.
Felt good.
I'm going to miss him.
Now all of a sudden, they move Reed Ryan out, so apparently Jared Crane can learn on the fly how to the game of baseball as president of the Astros.
Right.
And Nolan Ryan just says, all right, I'm up and out of here. And Jim Crane says that he tried to call him, but to no avail. And now there's a thawing relationship between Nolan Ryan and the Rangers, too. So I feel like we're going to see when the Astros go play the Rangers next year in that new ballpark, I feel like Nolan Ryan's going to be sitting behind home plate, selling his hot dogs up in the stands. So I don't know how to feel about Nolan Ryan. Is he Houston royalty?
Yeah.
Or is he just a guy that bounces back and forth between mom and dad in a divorced relationship?
Well,
I don't know.
Maybe the first time around when he went to the Rangers, it would have felt like, well, what choice did he have? This one, I think it feels like they're, you know, Reed's getting repositioned and Nolan, there's clearly something behind the scenes that's frustrating to Nolan Ryan about this whole thing. So my guess is Houstonians will be more sympathetic to it this time if he goes back and does stuff with the Rangers, because it would appear the optics of it are that the Ryans are getting kind of pushed aside. And I don't know that Jim Crane does his son any favors. I don't know that it matters. Ultimately, the president of a sports franchise, like you said earlier, Seth, is more in charge of the business side of things. They're not in the crosshairs when things are going poorly on the field. Like when the Texans are playing poorly, people aren't asking for Jamie Roots's head, right?
Yeah.
They're talking about the general manager and the head coach. So maybe it's an overreaction to say, boy, he's not doing his son any favors by having the Ryans sort of get caught up in the crosshairs and all this. But I don't think he's doing his son any favors because of that. Who is the Nolan Ryan equivalent for the other two teams? Where if the Rockets or the Texans were to sort of jerk with somebody like that it kind of alienated them, you'd be like, ugh. I mean, the Rockets, it's an easy one, right? It's Hakeem Olajuwon. That's the one for the Rockets, right? You know, like in terms of boy, I can't believe this guy is sideways with the team. With your former Texans, so who is it with the Texans?
The Texans, well, Andre Johnson. I mean, it got ugly when they got rid of Andre Johnson.
I think it's Andre Johnson.
It was I'm glad that got smoothed over. That's just the way it goes with aging great athletes.
Yeah.
It's ugly for a little while. Brett Favre was one of the ugliest, you know. Derek Jeter's going through it with the Yankees right now. At some point, Jeter's going to be welcomed back up into the fold.
Favre,
and they're going to make it. And
Favre and Green Bay.
So I guess Andre Johnson would be that guy right now.
Yeah.
There is no other. I mean, it's just such a short history.
Well, the
Oilers would be an interesting one. Because Warren Moon has become much more of a, like Warren Moon, I feel like identifies with the Seahawks more than the Oilers.
He didn't play very long for them, but he played up in Washington.
He lived up there.
He went to college in Washington.
He's part of their broadcast team. Kind of like his adopted family was up there. Like that. I don't want to say adopted, but like that family that kind of took him in and everything.
Yeah.
And then I feel like part of it, too, is that I think Warren Moon, and understandably so, I think has never necessarily let go of how harsh and ugly it was from some people when he first got here. I don't know. That's just what it feels like to me. Maybe, and I can't blame him for that. It just feels like because of his association with the Seahawks, he doesn't feel necessarily like as closely identified as some of the other Oilers.
That's why I think it would. My guess is it would be, and there's no Oilers organization to get sideways with anymore. They're the Tennessee Titans. But had they still existed, it would be Earl. Yeah. You know, somehow the Oilers still existed, and all of a sudden Earl Campbell was estranged from the organization for some reason. You know, Earl or Pastorini or one of those guys, one of the Love You Blue guys probably.
But Earl, he's so nice. I wouldn't see...
he is very nice.
I was actually thinking about this, the running back position in general today. They're usually a different... You always talk about quarterbacks keeping an even keel. Running backs... And I'm sure there's like three guys I'm not thinking of that would be complete outliers on this. Running backs are very even keeled. And it's always interesting because they're usually the most pound for pound, strongest, explosive guys on a team. Like they're so strong and they're so physical, but they also have to take a whole lot of abuse. And I think there's something ingrained. When I started thinking about various running backs that I played with and everything. Just in Earl Campbell, I think, falls into that same category. It's incredible how aggressive they can be on a football field and how tough they are, and yet nothing ever phases them.
Yeah.
Nolan Ryan, you can see his cantankerous side.
Yeah.
Earl Campbell, you don't see a cantankerous side.
Or Hakeem.
Yeah.
Or Andre, for that matter.
Right.
Well, unless you're Courtland Finnegan.
Andre, yeah, exactly. See, that's Andre, quiet waters run deeper, all that stuff.
Did you ever see that with him when you were a teammate?
You know what? Every now and then I could tell that Andre, it was tough for Andre because Andre had never had anything but success in football. You know, he went and played for a national championship college team. He did a really good job. Sometimes when guys come from environments like that and they come onto a bad football team in the NFL, they don't handle it well.
Right.
Andre handled it really well, but you could tell sometimes when he would get angry about and frustrated with the losing. You know, that's where you'd see it. But it was never ever, ever like in a counterproductive way.
Right.
It was just that I could see a side of Andre that I think publicly some people used to try to criticize Andre and act like because he was quiet that somehow he wasn't enough. No, there was such a fire to Andre that I think he just he just never really showed it in interviews or anything. He was an extreme fire.
As a teammate, you probably love seeing him getting frustrated that, right? Because you're losing football games.
Yeah.
If this were the pre-Deshaun era, these would be the names at QB that we would be talking about shopping list style. Life is much better, and we will explain next. Good point on the text page. Andre Johnson, Hakeem Olajuwon, Nolan Ryan, all threw hands on the playing field.
They did.
True story. They have that in common. They did indeed.
Is the only time they threw hands on the playing field with, what's his name there from the Titans?
Courtland Finnegan? You tell me. I don't know.
I don't remember another instance of him being just quite like that.
I don't either. The only other incident I would say Andre had would be when it looked like he wanted to throw hands with Matt Schaub at the end of that Raiders game in 2013.
That would be an ugly fight.
And he did. Schaub is a tomato can, dude. Oh, he is in the boxing world what you would call a tomato can.
Yeah, I didn't mean ugly like, wow, what a brawl it would be.
No. Schaub would be a grease spot in about 15 seconds. That would be like one of those old Tyson pay-per-views. Did you ever get a pay-per-view with Mike Tyson back when he was like peak Tyson?
No, that would be the worst spending of money ever. It was Tyson.
Literally,
kids,
you're paying like a dollar a second.
Yeah, kids, this is what, you know, when Tyson finally got beat, nobody saw it because nobody ever bothered watching. It was so boring. He would go out and just destroy people.
Yeah. Was Michael Spinks.
How often did he even leave the first round?
Not very often.
It was like Ronda Rousey was in women's boxing.
For a while.
Or women in MMA. It was no contest.
No. And then
Tyson, for a while with her,
And then Tyson, until Holly Holm.
Well, Ronda Rousey, it turns out, they were making sure that the fights went. Tyson, just nobody could beat him until Tyson beat himself.
Yeah, he went to jail, he got out, and then he's biting people's ears off on pay-per-view, which, by the way, I was totally cool with paying. I did buy that on pay-per-view.
Oh, Holyfield, Tyson.
Holyfield and Tyson, and these people afterwards, after he chewed Evander Holyfield's ear off, both of them, he bit into both ears. One of them he actually took a chunk out of, spit onto the mat, and there are these people afterwards like, I want my money back. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I would pay, if I knew that was going to happen, I would have paid $150.
You know, we interviewed Holyfield at the Super Bowl this year, and it was awesome because he talked about that fight.
Atlanta. He's an Atlanta guy.
Yeah, and he was talking about how when Tyson bit him, Holyfield, I remember the word he used, but he knew it was a good thing. He said because he knew Tyson was scared at that point.
Yeah.
And he said it's because he remembered from when he was a kid and he'd bite his older siblings. It was because he was scared.
That's right.
So he knew that. And then Holyfield was really cool. I got to go back and listen to that interview. He talked very openly about how scared he was as a boxer. Like, because it is, you think about these guys being such badasses. But how terrifying it is too that you're going in and potentially getting bludgeoned to death.
Rocky Balboa gave that bit of advice to Tommy Gunn in Rocky V.
Yeah.
He said, your best friend, who's your best friend back in Orlando? And Tommy Gunn's like, I'm from Oklahoma. He goes, okay, in Oklahoma. He goes, Tom Johnson. No, your best friend's name is Frankie Fear. Because fear can drive. Rocky goes into this whole illiterate thing of how fear is this fire that drives within you. But
yeah.
I remember that. Like, fear is what drives you. Yeah.
It's just really cool. I always impressed when people like speak openly about that stuff. Like, the biggest badasses on earth talk about something like that. And it's like they've conquered it.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're sitting there quivering and saying they're scared.
If you're in your car wondering, can I quote the entire movie Rocky V? The answer is yes. I can recite the worst of all the Rocky movies is for the same reasons you like that Arnold Schwarzenegger Hercules movie from 1970 is why I love Rocky V.
Rocky
V. It's an abject train wreck.
It's harder to make fun of Rocky V now because his son passed away.
It is.
It was one of the worst casting decisions since, really.
Now that's nepotism.
When Francis
Forget
Ford
about promoting your kid to be president of a baseball team. Rocky promoting his son to be Rocky's son in a movie and actually be good at boxing was worse than any decision any pro sports team has made nepotism-wise.
He wasn't good at boxing. He just at least could defend himself, right?
His son. On a playground, yeah.
Yeah, so
against
at least that.
Dude who wound up playing E on Entourage.
Oh, really? That's right. Well, now the other bad casting choice involving a family member was Francis Ford Coppola in which Godfather was it?
Godfather 3.
Put his daughter in it.
She was terrible.
She'd never acted before.
It was awful.
How do you do that?
She was awful.
That's when you get a little too cocky for your own good.
Here's hoping Jared Crane is better than Coppola's kid and Rocky's kid.
So who would be the worst? So on a scale of Rocky's kid was probably worse than Sofia Coppola,
I think.
I remember watching her, and at least it was passable
R.I.P., but he was terrible. His name was Sage Stallone.
So somehow Jared Crane's got to beat out those two.
He's got to beat out Sage Stallone, and is it Sofia Coppola?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. So there you go. There are odds out, Seth, on which coach will be fired first. How'd you like to be a coach? And it's not whether or not you'll be fired. It's whether you'll be the first one fired of these two. Adam Gase or Freddie Kitchens? You got $100 worth of your daughter's college fund you got to put on it.
These are both, and she's paying for college herself. These are both.
Cool, then bet the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, she's
what
got
I would
a
do.
Quote unquote college fund.
I got gotcha. You.
That's how I've got it disguised from the missus. So, okay, now this is a dicey situation because both these teams have been embarrassed for quite some time now.
Yes.
And both these teams made a decision on a guy that they just now hired.
Yeah.
The Jets, this is where it gets so hard. The Jets and the Browns have both learned this lesson that, hey, one thing about firing a coach is that it's not always so easy to find the ideal replacement. Sometimes you go with an Adam Gase or with a Freddie Kitchens. So which one of those teams do you think has a potential replacement in line already? I feel like the Jets, because the Jets have at least relatively recently compared to the Browns, I'd say been a competitor. You know, they've had some good years not too far back. They're
Fitzy year.
They're an ownership group that's been around long enough. They whiffed on the last couple coaching hires. I think there's a better chance that the Jets have a replacement in mind, and I think Adam Gase might be first to go.
Okay, I would say I would feel better about the Browns having a replacement in line. And here's why. John Dorsey, look, hiring Freddie Kitchens was a bad decision. I think most sane people thought it was a bad decision. Like, what the hell are you doing? The guy wasn't even nobody's talking about this guy as a head coach. At least with Gase, he'd been a head coach. I feel like John Dorsey, just because he's been in that position, not necessarily with the Browns, but in a general manager's position for a while, I feel like he's gone through this before. He's probably got a network of guys he has in mind. I just feel like Dorsey is a guy who probably recognized early on, like, boy, this was a disaster.
Right.
Whereas Gase is a guy who got the GM fired as soon as he got there. He didn't coach a game yet as a Jets. He got the general manager fired.
Well, and okay, now this is the other thing, too. Okay, so you're asking who will fire their head coach first? I think it's the Jets. Yeah. If I were a potential head coach, the Browns are the job that I would want.
Oh, for sure.
Because for one, just like you said, with the weirdness of Gase getting the GM fired when you get there, but then the organization is hiring your coaches for you. They put Greg Williams and Joe Vitt on the same staff together. Joe Vitt, although they claim that they'd smooth this over before, Joe Vitt is on record, on court record, talking about what a clown of a human being Greg Williams is.
From the Bounty Gate stuff.
Yeah,
right?
From the Bounty Gate stuff and everything. And like they just decide to put those guys on there. It's a mess there. The Browns are a mess in certain ways, but I like what you said about John Dorsey. The guy doesn't give a... I would prefer if I were a head coach that I might not be coaching a complete cast of criminals and John Dorsey doesn't seem to care.
Yeah.
But you look at it on paper and you look at the roster, the Browns should be a much better team than they are.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm a coach that feels I'm worth my salt, I look at those two rosters and organizations and I think I've got a better shot with the Browns.
I put it real simply, Seth. I feel like the Browns, you could look at the Browns job and go, hey, this is a team that's a head coach away from actually being a good team again.
Right.
Like you could remove Freddie Kitchens, put your baseline average head coach in there, and I think the team actually becomes pretty good.
I heard somebody yesterday say that he thinks there's 5 NFL coaches right now that could have the Browns be a 12-win team. Which I feel like is overstating a little bit of what maybe you can do with Baker Mayfield in his second year.
Yes.
I don't know how much of this to put on Freddie Kitchens versus how much of it is on Baker Mayfield, because he's doing some things. It's not like Baker Mayfield is always bad because he's always getting crushed or something. He's the worst quarterback from a clean pocket in the NFL, too. It doesn't matter whether he's under pressure, whether he's in a clean pocket. He's not doing good quarterback things. So there's kind of whoever comes in is going to have to re-educate him on playing the quarterback and learn a lot of things that Deshaun learned this year.
Sure.
Except Deshaun was already better. When to take the easy gains on first and second down.
That's the other thing, is that if these teams fire either of these coaches, you're talking about two highly drafted quarterbacks, Baker Mayfield first overall, Sam Darnold third overall in the 2018 draft, that'll be going on their third head coaches in 3 years. Hugh Jackson, Freddie Kitchens, and whoever gets hired with the Browns, and then Todd Bowles, Adam Gase, and whoever gets hired with the Jets. All right, Football Friday here on Sports Radio 610. Shifting gears, speaking of quarterbacks, Seth, there are odds out on a handful of quarterbacks. The market of guys who are potential bridge quarterbacks for teams that don't have a young quarterback or are drafting a young quarterback, the market is going to be flush with guys this year.
There are a ton of guys out there.
Inadequate guys that you'll give a 2-year, $20 million deal to.
Or if not even inadequate, I would say guys where you could say, all right, with the right people around him, with a good cast around him, that this quarterback could actually do something.
All right, so I've got... It's about a dozen names in front of me. We'll rapid fire these. And you tell me, do you think these guys will be a starting quarterback for an NFL team in week one of the 2020 season?
Okay.
Andy Dalton.
I think he will be. I think he's going to go somewhere where either they draft a quarterback late in the first round or something, or they have a young guy, and Andy Dalton's the perfect bridge quarterback.
So he's reached that stage now where he's bridge quarterback.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cam Newton.
I think he'll be the quarterback for the Carolina Panthers.
Okay.
I think, you've got 3 years to make a decision on Kyle Allen. If Cam Newton is healthy, people are talking about this $20 million salary like it's some kind of albatross or something. If Cam Newton's foot and shoulder are healthy, $20 million is a bargain.
Yeah.
I'd pay $20 million to have him as my backup quarterback if he's healthy. So I'm banking on him being healthy.
Boy, that's taking Deshaun's rookie deal to a new extreme. Hey, we got Deshaun on a rookie deal. We're going to give Cam Newton $20 million to be our backup.
If he were completely healthy and if he would accept the job,
which I
don't think he would do.
If he were the backup, he'd have to dress just in jeans and a t-shirt every day. He can't dress in all his crazy stuff.
I feel like he would go the opposite way because he'd have all sorts of time
you
and energy to devote.
Like Elton John?
Like Lady Gaga. He'd come in with a train behind him.
Backup?
On an actual locomotive.
Right.
He would enter on top of a caboose.
Eli Manning.
No, he's done.
Do you think he's out of the league?
He needs to. Peyton's got to grab him and shake him and tell him to retire.
Gardner Minshew.
Gardner Minshew will still be with the Jacksonville Jaguars. He will not be the starting quarterback.
Yeah, I would
agree. He won't start as the starting quarterback, but he could end up the starting quarterback.
How do you think Foles is going to do the rest of the year?
I think Foles will be all right. They're just not the team. They had that one-off year. Boy, talk about a weird year in 2017 where they were driven so much by their defense. That you couldn't expect that the defense would be that good as they aged. I think that Foles is going to be better than Minshew just because of his veteran savvy, and also they're going to get some speed back with health in their wide receiving core. So I think he has a winning record in the second half of the season.
Okay. Jameis Winston.
There's talk that plenty of teams out there would be willing to pay him a really good chunk on a 3-year deal or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Where's that talk coming from? Are you making this up?
No.
Who are you talking to?
I heard this
these
on the
days.
Ringer podcast, which is Robert Mays and the other guy who's both
Kevin
really,
Clark?
Kevin Clark, couple of good writers. So Jameis Winston, I think, will be the starting quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too.
They're one of the best offenses in the NFL. It's weird.
They are. He hasn't stopped turning the ball
over.
But
for the interceptions, I shouldn't say best. They're one of the most productive offenses in the NFL, if you just ignore all the turnovers.
Yeah. Joe Flacco.
Oh, Flacco. No, not a starter.
Yeah.
I think he's reached, if he chooses to keep playing football, then so be it. But he's veteran backup at this point.
No for Joe Flacco is minus 180.
Yeah.
Which means you got to lay 180 to win 100. So you're laying a lot more than you would win. To me, that's the biggest lock on the board. Joe Flacco is not starting for an NFL team.
He's Matt Hasselbeck.
He is not starting for an NFL team. Kyle Allen.
Kyle Allen, I'd say no, he's going to be a backup to Cam Newton at the beginning of the year. But again, they've got a couple years to make a decision on him.
Yeah. Marcus Mariota.
No, Marcus Mariota will be in career reclamation mode at some point. My advice for Marcus Mariota would be, for the first time in your NFL career, go and sit behind a really good NFL starter and see the way he operates psychologically. I don't doubt his work ethic or anything, but he needs to really just absorb and learn, okay, this is how you play the game of football, and how do you work on your mechanics?
Would you take Marcus Mariota as the backup to Deshaun Watson?
That's a good idea. That's a really good idea. Yeah. And you could run the exact same Deshaun Watson package. And yeah, I like that.
I think he'd be a great backup to Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, why am I not stumping for that already? I think that needs to be the case.
You know why? Because you made it sound like a situation where he's got to go kind of watch maybe an older guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And Deshaun's younger than he is, but I think he could learn a lot from watching Deshaun.
Deshaun's already the best version of what... Now, Mariota could never physically do some of the things that Deshaun does, because Mariota doesn't have the...
He doesn't have
the arm talent, and I'm not talking about arm strength or anything like that. I'm talking about accuracy and field vision.
Yeah.
So I say arm talent, just quarterbacking skills.
Yes.
And he's not as complete an athlete. Marcus Mariota is fast, but he's not the all-around athlete that Deshaun is.
Mitchell Trubisky.
Oh, no.
You don't think he'll be a starter?
I don't think
Chicago's going to go one more year on him?
No, I don't
Some
think
of
they
it
can.
Depend
you know
on
what?
How
it's going to depend. He's going to be... It's either going to be Nagy or Trubisky. I mean, Nagy... The one question people have right now about Trubisky is, why are they not using his legs more? That's the one thing he can do. It's honorable that you're trying to turn him into a more complete NFL quarterback, but it's not happening right this moment. Make it a little bit easier on him and use his legs. Have more designed quarterback runs. Try to make him more like Lamar Jackson at this point than whatever the hell you're trying to do. But I don't think he's going to be the starter. You can't roll him back out there for the fan base. You can't roll him back out there for his psychological well-being. The kid's a mess.
He is. He's turning off TVs and what? Ryan Tannehill.
There's a good chance.
By the way, the question I'm posing to Seth, if you're just jumping in here, is will they be a starting quarterback in week one of next year?
Is Tannehill's contract, did he sign just a 1-year deal?
I'm not sure. Everything's a 1-year deal when you're that level of player.
If he's under contract, I don't think the Titans are being in a position to draft a guy that starts right away, necessarily.
I think he'll be the bridge guy for the Titans.
So he'll be the starting quarterback next year in game one.
I think so, too. Teddy Bridgewater.
Yes.
Somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere.
Okay.
Good job, Teddy.
There you go.
Good job, Saints. Yeah. Remember, people were kind of wondering, all right, what exactly are the Saints doing with Teddy Bridgewater? Oh, okay, I see.
That's right. It worked out exactly like it was supposed to.
Oh, that's right. Drew Brees is really old, and you anticipate him getting hurt at some point, and Teddy Bridgewater steps in, and there.
Robert Flores
real quick.
Yeah.
Does Teddy Bridgewater, is the best move for Teddy Bridgewater to take an extension with the Saints and then just kind of wait out his time for Drew Brees? If Drew Brees only has a couple years left, Teddy knows that he works well with Sean Payton.
Might not be a bad idea.
And just like it would be another year or two of game staying completely healthy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess the variable in that is how much longer is Drew Brees going to be around. But not the worst idea in the world.
I would do
sure.
I would take an extension, and then I would Tanya Harding him.
Robert.
I would hire a henchman to wait for Drew Brees in the corner somewhere.
They call that galooling.
Galooling, yeah, that's right. Galooly was the guy galooling. That did it. Yeah.
Robert Flores was on with Clint Sterner and Wade Smith yesterday. Talked about the odds of Gerrit Cole coming back, and then who could potentially replace Gerrit Cole. We'll get to that next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you.
I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.